Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 31 of Season 5 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Richard Kirkham from from the Lambcast.
There you go.
The Shepherd of the Lambcast and Kirkham, a movie a day. There we go. I got that one right, I think. Did I?
Yes, that's close enough.
What do you mean close enough? What is it? It's Kirkham, a movie a day, isn't it?
There you go.
All right, that's what I said. Yeah. So welcome back to the show, Richard. Great to have you back.
Hey, they told me they were terrorists at the airport.
Yeah, we're not going to get there till the very end, but yeah. Only if your gangs have got training at Fort Bragg.
That's it.
So minute 31 begins with Lorenzo continuing his report and ends with Burke reaching for his walkie-talkie. We ended things on Friday with a shot of the control tower. You know, we get to see Trudeau again, which I know that's the main reason you wanted this week, because you want to talk about Trudeau. We're gonna have what to talk about dealing with Trudeau this week. So you got what you wanted, Richard.
All right.
You well, can that talk works about well. Fred Dalton Thompson as much as you want this week.
He's in most of these scenes for sure.
Yeah, that's right. We talked a little bit about him last week, but if you have stuff to add, that would be great. Also, we basically ended with Lorenzo starting to give Trudeau a little bit of an update as to what's going on. So my biggest question that I asked this last week also, and, you know, I'm going to ask you it also, is why does it seem as if Lorenzo, you know, or why does it seem as if Trudeau is Lorenzo's boss? You'd think that the person
like in charge of the whole airport.
He's in charge of the whole airport, or is he in charge of the control tower? That's what it seems to me. Why is he?
Well, you know, if you're the captain of the ship and you're on the bridge, you're in charge. He's the captain of the tower, so he's in charge.
True, but you'd think that the police would be, you know, separate. It's not, again, we're not talking Star Trek. We're not saying that, okay, you know, Kirk or Picard or whichever, you know, captain you want to choose, you know, they're in charge of security. Yes. You know, Tasha Yar or I don't even know who's the security chief. It's not Chekhov, is it? Chekhov's the weapons guy.
At one point, he's in charge of security, but no, I don't think it's Chekhov.
Exactly. No, but my point is that yes, on a situation like a starship, okay, the security is
But the police and security are never autonomous. They usually have to answer, at least in this country and most democracies, they have to answer to the political institutions or some administrative force. They don't operate and act on their own. So Trudeau is basically the person in charge of the airport, and so he's the overseer of activities at the airport. I get the impression he's the chief of airport operations, and security is a subsection of airport operations.
Okay. All right, that's fair. I didn't think of it that way. You know, so he's basically, okay, he's the airport COO. Okay.
Yeah.
That position is someone who has authority for directing and coordinating the daily activities of operations. So, okay, I guess it does fit in there. You're right. And I never thought about it. I always just thought of Trudeau as the guy in charge of the control tower. You know, not necessarily as the chief operating officer of the entire airport. So that sort of makes sense. Wow, that salary is pretty high for today. I can't
tell you. Oh, you're looking that up. Well, you got to be pretty knowledgeable and authoritative.
Yeah,
you're not just a glorified air traffic controller.
Right. I mean, I see here that it's you know, the annual salary is anywhere between $200,000 and $225,000 for that job. So, but it's got a lot of responsibilities.
I get the impression that he's the Burt Lancaster of the film.
Yes. Okay. That's true. And I just, you know, rewatched Airport a few weeks ago. So I knew what you were talking about there. Was Burt Lancaster, was his character in the control tower running things?
I don't remember. You saw the movie more recently than I have.
I know, but I don't remember him being in the control tower. He was, he was definitely dealing with things, you know, dealing with all the problems in the airport.
Yeah, he's calling the control tower. Most of the time he's in his office or out
in the snow,
whatever you call it, the walkways, the causeways, the airport, the terminal.
Yeah, it's true. So Lorenzo continues with his diatribe that he started on Friday, and he says, so they got it right on the news, bloodstains and all. I'd like to lock every damn reporter out of the airport, but they pull that freedom of speech crap on us. Then the ACLU will be all over us. And then the response that we get from Trudeau is murder on television. Hell of a start for Christmas week. First of all, the first thing that jumped out at me here is, first of all, I like the fact that we see Lorenzo like follow Trudeau around. You know, he looks like a lapdog the way that he's following him around, you know, going up the stairs with him within it, you know, updating him on everything that's been going on. You know, he mentions the ACLU. So what do you know about the ACLU?
Well, it's not what it used to be. The ACLU is the American Civil Liberties Union, mm-hmm. and they supposedly are a legal organization that's devoted to protecting the civil rights of Americans, in particular those related to constitutional questions. They are famous for taking on a lot of tough cases over the years, trying to protect people who were maybe outgunned by the authorities, and they would step in to take a position. They're notorious for challenging the presence of, a creche on the city hall lawn because it violates the separation of church and state, or defending somebody who wants to burn the flag. One of the most famous cases that they took on was they spoke on behalf of Nazis in Skokie, Illinois, back in, I think it was 1977 or 78.
Yeah, it was the late 70s.
When they wanted to parade, mm-hmm. and the Chicago authorities wanted to shut it down, and the ACLU was on the side of the Nazis. They don't believe in what the Nazis stood for, but they believe they had a right to speak. This is, of course, vastly different from today, where they are interested in deplatforming anybody that is involved in promoting what they say is hate speech. They don't seem to be on the side of people who still want to express themselves.
Right.
They've become a different kind of organization.
Correct.
Now, much more political.
Yes.
Than they were.
Yeah. Do you know when it was founded?
I want to say it was early in the 20th century, but I could be wrong.
Okay. Yes, it was 1920. It was founded as a nonprofit organization in 1920, and their platform was to defend and preserve the individual rights and liberties guaranteed to every person in the country.
Yes.
Currently, they have over 2 million members that are part of it, you know, card-carrying members of the ACLU, and they have an annual budget over 300 million. So, yeah, it doesn't sound as if it's, you know, it's lost its grassroots abilities of what it was at the beginning.
They were loosely affiliated lawyers at one point, but I think they've become kind of an institutional organization now, where the lawyers primarily work for the ACLU as opposed to being lawyers that the ACLU has reached out to connect with.
Right. Right. I think it works that way. Yeah. So I was looking at the list of the committee that originally founded the ACLU, and most of the names I didn't recognize. I mean, I could read them off and maybe you'll recognize somebody, but there was one that really stood out for me. So I'll just quickly go through the list and you'll tell me if anyone stands out for you. Okay, Roger Nash Baldwin, Crystal Eastman, Walter Nellis, Morris Ernst, Albert DeSilva, Arthur Garfield Hayes. Do you recognize any of those names? I don't.
The Silver sounds familiar, but I'm not exactly sure why.
Okay. Jane Addams, Felix Frankfurter. That name sounds familiar, but I don't know from where.
Felix Frankfurter, I think, was a Justice of the Supreme Court at one time.
Okay, that's possible. Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, Rose Schneiderman, and the one that jumped out at me was Helen Keller. I didn't know that Helen Keller was part of that. That just like really shocked me. You know, that she was one of the founding members.
That surprises me a little bit, but she was known to be an activist on behalf of all kinds of people.
Right. True. And then, I mean, what Trudeau says there is murder on television. Hell of a start for Christmas week. Right. So first of all, we pretty much established earlier, in earlier episodes, that this must be very close to Christmas. It's not Christmas week. 1990 Christmas came out Tuesday. Christmas
Nope,
Eve was
nope.
Monday night.
No, I you're
No,
right.
Christmas Eve
You're
was
right.
Monday night and Christmas Day was Tuesday. That's fine. Okay. But we've pretty much figured out that this must be like Friday because, Holly stayed to work a little longer and is flying in. So for him to say Christmas week, the start of Christmas week, so I don't know. It just seems a little strange to say Christmas week, or maybe the weekend before. I guess it just flowed better to say Christmas week as opposed to saying the weekend before Christmas or something like that. And then, he mentions about murder on television. So back in 1990, okay, I mean today you see it. There's a lot of reality TV shows, that have, like cops and things like that, which you will see different depictions of real murder footage and stuff like that. But when 1990, when this movie came out, there weren't that many. Can you think of any,
They were very discreet about showing anything that had film footage of somebody being
Correct, but I'm talking.
injured
I
or
actually
hurt.
am
It's
thinking what I'm talking about here. There were three instances that I know of, okay. And when I looked it up, I was refreshed about
well,
them,
I
which
watched the
happened
Patty
live.
Hearst, the Siboney's Liberation Army all die in a flaming house in Los Angeles area in, I think that was 1974.
I think it was 73 or 74. That's right. I remember that. No, but I'm talking about live footage where they weren't, ex you know, where it wasn't like a, it wasn't something that was previously taped, and it wasn't something that went with the case that you just brought. So, they were showing live footage of an assault, on the compound or something like that. I'm talking right now that there are three instances where somebody was, actually all three of them, someone was shot dead on live TV. It wasn't known beforehand that that's what was going to happen. Can you think of any of those three cases? I
No.
know one of them you for sure know about. The other two you might have heard of.
Well, I'm the Jack Ruby getting shot
That
on TV when he was
no,
being transferred.
no, Jack Ruby was not shot. Jack Ruby shot.
Or Jack Ruby doing the
That's
shooting of
right.
Oswald.
Lee Harvey Oswald is the first one that I was thinking of. Okay, yes, the I guess you can say the assassination or the shooting of Lee Harvey Oswald. That is one of them. Have you ever heard the name Christine Chubbuck?
I don't think
Okay,
so. She's not a news
she's a
reporter.
news reporter. She was a news reporter in the 1970s, and she actually committed suicide on live TV.
That I have heard of that case. I didn't remember her name, but I do remember that
Yeah,
case, yeah.
there was actually a movie about it called Christine, and there was a documentary, and maybe there's even like a TV movie about it or whatever. On July 15th, 1974, she came into work and said that she was chosen to read a newscast on live TV, and she started reading the newscast about something that happened. There was like national news stories that happened the day before and a shooting the previous day. And the whole idea was that she wasn't advancing in her career because they kept telling her that they want more sensationalized news. So she decided that what she was going to do is shoot herself. So she shot herself in the head on live TV. A lot of people didn't think it was real. And right beforehand, she says, in keeping with the WXLT practice of presenting the most immediate and complete reports of local blood and guts news, TV 40 Presents was believed to be a television first in living color, an exclusive coverage of an attempted suicide. And then she pulled out a gun and shot herself behind her, shot herself from behind, basically. They obviously immediately faded to black, and they tried saving her, and she had even written a script that was to be read after what happens. And she wrote, TV 40 news personality Christine Chubbuck shot herself in a live broadcast this morning on Channel 40 talk program. She was rushed to Sarasota Memorial Hospital, where she remains in critical condition. She expected to live through it. It took she was in the hospital. They tried saving her life, but after 14 hours, she passed away. So that was one of the first. That was the first one. And then there's another one. Have you ever heard of someone by the name of Bud Dwyer?
It sounds familiar, but I couldn't tell you
Okay, he
what
was a Pennsylvania
I know.
politician who ended up being the state treasurer, and he was indicted on, or was found guilty on 11 counts of conspiracy, mail fraud, and perjury after taking a bribe. And he was scheduled to be sentenced on January 23rd, 1987. The day before he called a news conference, everyone assumed that he was going to be, announcing that he's retiring. And instead, he just pulled out a gun and shot himself in front of all these reporters. And they had live footage of it. And they even showed footage afterwards on TV of him shooting himself. Not easy things to watch, but it's interesting that today we're much more desensitized to these type of things, watching things like this on TV. And even back in 1990, there were very few cases of real, live footage of someone dying on screen, And then the final one that I want to bring up is a fictional one, which you might know also about. Can you think of a movie?
Network.
That's right, Network. Howard Beale and Peter Finch. Peter Finch played Howard Beale, and do you remember what he said?
He's mad as hell and he's not going to take it
That's
anymore.
right. So yeah, that's another example of someone who does that. Back to what we're talking about, right away, we have Barnes pipe up and says, "What is this? A gang thing like last time?" So it's interesting. Last time, meaning they're used to the fact that there are gangs that are breaking into the luggage area. That's like a common thing going on in Dallas. Sounds a little strange to me.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand that reference. It made it sound like there had been something that happened previously where there was somebody killed or something was happening at the airport. And by the way, it's not a surprise that gang killings happen all over the place, so that one happened at the airport, I guess it wouldn't be too surprising, too different
Okay,
from
that's
what
true.
goes on in the
No, it
world.
also would give a little more of an explanation as to why Lorenzo isn't that fazed by this whole thing. He's like, okay, this is something that's happened before. That's why, if it was something that this was the first time that something like this happened, maybe he would have reacted differently. But maybe, so I think that line is a good indication that they're used to this type of thing happening. Maybe not, getting shot by a police officer or whatever. I don't know. And as this is happening, then we hear a voice from afar say, "Only if your gangs get their training at Fort Bragg." And then we see a shot of McClane showing up, and he walks up and he's holding up his badge pretty quickly. Don't you think they should have like security at in at the entrance to the control tower? Like, can anyone just get in?
Well, the world's a different place nowadays. You can't get anywhere. All those people wouldn't have been anywhere near the baggage areas in today's world. You wouldn't be able to get past the security line to start with. So all the stuff that's going on there in the airport, it's vastly different now. In those days, look, he basically followed the security guy up the stairs.
Right, more or less.
I mean, he's coming right up behind Lorenzo.
Right. It's true. And then Trudeau says, "Who the hell is this?" Lorenzo starts wagging his finger at McClane and goes, "McClane." McClane goes, "I'm a police officer." And Lorenzo says, "In an unauthorized area, LA, Mr. Trudeau, don't mean sh here." It's the badge and looks at it and says, "That's what I said about my last cholesterol test."
Yeah.
So then Trudeau says to McClane, "So what's your problem, Lieutenant McClane?" As he's looking at the badge, he goes, "I'm sure Captain Lorenzo already explained the minor little fracas with the minor little thieves." And then he pulls out the dossier and says, "Maybe he can explain this." All right, that's the way the dialogue here ends. Well, we'll get into a little more about that. So the first thing I wanted to mention is, he mentions Fort Bragg. Do you know what Fort Bragg is?
Well, I'm sure it's a training center. I'm not sure it probably is a training center for CIA or for SEAL teams, Rangers, something like that.
Okay, yeah, you're very close on that. So Fort Bragg is a military installation in North Carolina, and it is one of the largest military installations in the world by population because it has over 54,000 military personnel that are there. It's very close to Fayetteville, and it's named after North Carolinian Confederate General Braxton Bragg. And this is one of only 10 Army installations in the U.S. that are named for officers who fought for the Confederacy. Now, that has actually brought up a lot of controversy, and they decided that they're actually going to rename all of those 10 installations, even though at the time this happened right at the beginning of 2021, when Trump was still president, and Trump tried to veto it, and he didn't manage to do it because the Congress had a Democratic majority at the time, so they were able to veto his veto. And so they're actually going to be renaming it Fort Liberty, which actually just happened this month, the beginning of June. They changed the name to Fort Liberty. It's actually the only one of the 10 that they changed that won't be named after a person. So that's also strange that they decided to call it Fort Liberty. And the entire cost of changing the name of these 10 installations is $62.5 million. I mean, that's just a hell of a lot of money to waste to change names.
A lot of signs and stationery that you got to change.
That's right. Completely. And just specifically for Fort Bragg / Fort Liberty, it'll be $6 million. So it's a $6 million man. You know, just changing that name.
Well, it's a little virtue signaling. I understand that it's unpopular to seem to suggest that we are honoring, people that were rebels. But I have no doubt that the general or the major, whoever Bragg was probably in the U.S. military before he was in the Confederacy.
Yes,
he was in service someplace.
Yes.
And, he's probably somebody from that area. So that's why they chose that particular name.
That's correct.
And, it's just a way to do a local thing. But, what the hell? That's the world we live in.
Yes, for sure. That's Fort Bragg. And then you have he mentioned about his cholesterol test. So I'm not going to do a cholesterol test on you right now. You don't have to worry about, you don't have to give any blood today, Richard.
Well, I'm glad I don't have to give any blood. I can tell you my blood pressure, but I don't have any numbers for my cholesterol.
Exactly. So basically, do you know where the word cholesterol comes from?
I do not know the etymology of the word cholesterol.
Right. So it comes from the ancient Greek, where chole, C-H-O-L-E, means bile, and steros means solid, and ol means alcohol. So it's basically checking your solid bile alcohol level in your body. It was first identified in 1769 by a doctor or a researcher named François Poulietter de La Salle. It was not named until 1815 by a different researcher named a chemist, Michel Eugène Chevreul. He named it cholesterine, and so that changed. So basically, the AHA, the American Heart Association, recommends that everyone gets tested every 4 to 6 years if you're between the ages of 20 and 45. 45 to 65, you should be tested every 1 or 2 years, and anyone over the age of 65 should be tested annually, just to check for that.
I'm sure I'll get an annual check in October.
That's true. And then I love the line that McClane says here about a minor little fracas with the minor little thieves. Have you ever heard the word fracas before?
Yeah. I have.
Do you know what it means?
It's a set to a conflict when people engage in some kind of physical altercation.
So the official definition of a fracas is a noisy quarrel or a brawl, basically.
Brawl. That sounds like an appropriate term.
And there's actually even a military acronym called FRACAS, which is Failure Reporting Analysis and Corrective Action System. So I just thought that was really funny that that they actually have
a coincidence.
Yes, completely. Have you ever heard of lingua fracas?
No.
Okay.
Lingua fracas.
Which it's words that one knows in another language that are sufficient to start a fight. Them's fighting words. Or it could also be a fight over the proper use of a word. Did you notice, did you look at McClane's badge?
I did not look closely at the badge. Okay. I assume it was an LAPD badge, but I didn't check
it. It's an LAPD badge, but it looks completely fake. You know, it's like it's a wallet type badge that on the one side has, you know, the badge itself, and the other one just has like a picture,
an ID,
right? But it doesn't have a picture of John. It just has a picture that says Los Angeles police officer, and then it says you know, John McClane. He signs it as John McClane. It's printed there also, Detective John McClane. And then underneath it has some other signature. So I'm trying to think of where it actually says that he's a lieutenant, because if it says detective, so how would Trudeau know to call him lieutenant?
Well, it might be on the badge, but I didn't see the badge that closely.
No, the badge just says, the only thing it says on the badge is Detective Los Angeles and then 8986. That's his number. It's possible that maybe the color would tell you that, you know, whether that, you know, what his rank is or something like that. I don't know. I would be surprised if Trudeau actually knew it. But I mean, we know Fred Dalton Thompson is a really smart guy. So maybe he was able to figure that out also. I don't know. And then later on, when John shows the dossier to Trudeau and Lorenzo, you know, if you look carefully at all the things, and last week we talked about the specific lines that are there, Fort Bragg isn't listed at all here. You know, he's in all these different other places, but Fort Bragg is not mentioned. So I just find it really funny that, you know, they didn't, you know, they were very detailed in what they're writing here, and they didn't even just throw in Fort Bragg knowing that that's what they're talking about. I mean, maybe somewhere else it's listed, but I assume it's not, because it's, you know, it has a list of all of his assignments. You know, we have a list of 8 assignments that he's had, or the 8th one was he was killed. So 7 assignments plus his supposed death, you know, in Honduras in a helicopter accident. But, you know, it's just a little strange that, you know, that he mentions Fort Bragg. The only thing here is Fort Benning is the only fort that's mentioned. I mean, we talked about this last week also that, you know, the actor who plays the character of Cochran was born in 61. And according to his dossier, he was already assigned duty in Cambodia in 69. So how many 8-year-olds were they sending to fight in Vietnam? I'm not sure about that.
Issues that nobody worried about before the introduction of freeze frame on home video.
That's right. And movies by minute. And then we get a lot of tense music along with a shot of all 3 of them. You know, we see, you know, McClane, Lorenzo, and Trudeau. Change, it shows us once again a shot of the church. And, you know, it's well lit. A lot of snow, a lot of fake snow happening. Then we see somebody doing some welding conduit. We're not really sure what he's doing there. And then he opens up his mask. And did you notice who that actor is? He's actually a very well-known actor.
I didn't.
John Leguizamo.
Leguizamo?
Yeah.
I knew he was in the movie, but I didn't know that was him.
Yes. So his character's name is Burke. And so we see him put his glove under his arm and reach into his pocket. And that's how the minute ends. Did you have anything else you want to say about the minute before we get into the script?
No, I don't think there's anything else that I wanted to add about the things that we saw on screen.
Okay. All right, great. So there's a few little differences here, not many. After Lorenzo starts talking about it, he says bloodstains and all. Then Trudeau says, couldn't be helped, I guess. What was it, gangs? So in the script, it's Trudeau who says it, not Barnes. You know, and they change the dialogue a little bit. And then we hear McClane's voice where he says about Fort Bragg. And then it says, surprised, they turn to see McClane step out of the elevator. And then McClane goes.
Yeah, there's no elevator.
That's right. Well, there is. We'll find out later that there is an elevator. He comes up a flight of stairs.
But he comes up the stairs right behind Lorenzo.
Yes, but maybe there was an elevator beforehand. Maybe there's an elevator to the top of the tower, and then you have the steps because there's you know, 2 levels in the tower. That could be. And then the only other difference is that McClane says, I'm a police officer, Mr. Trudeau. So how does McClane already know Trudeau's name?
I didn't hear if he was, you know, listening. I didn't see if he was listening in to Lorenzo when he came into the control tower. Right. That might have been at the tail end of the last scene. Or the previous right. minute.
Well, I mean, in the script, it's not mentioned. In the script, he doesn't mention it because it starts in the middle of Lorenzo talking. So we don't hear the fact that we don't hear the name Trudeau mentioned. But I don't know,
Maybe he's got a badge.
maybe, or maybe, McLean Googled him beforehand to find out.
Yeah, I don't think, yeah, that not in 1990 did he Google him.
Not at all. Yeah. All right, so there's a difference in the script. So every Monday we have a segment called McLean Monday, where my guests will give their top five Bruce Willis performances. So, Richard, what have you got for us? Start with your number five and work your way up.
Well, I think my list is conventional. I don't think anybody would be surprised by any of the choices that I've got. Number five, I have David Dunn from Unbreakable. I thought he was very solid in that movie. There's a good scene where he does some nice acting with his face when he's on the train, taking off his ring and thinking about, hitting on the girl that he sees on the train. And then, of course, when he has the realization about what's going on. So I thought he was effective there. Number four is Butch Coolidge, or Coolidge, I guess is the way you would say his name. I only heard him referred to as Butch most of the time. You know, Butch, our names don't mean shit. from Pulp Fiction. I remember seeing the movie. I think I've seen the movie twice. And I remember being impressed both times by the two actors that are in the movie, Brad Pitt and Bruce Willis in 12 Monkeys. So he plays the part of James Cole. And I thought it was very solid there. Number two is Malcolm Crowe from The Sixth Sense. Another one of those scenes where he's doing some acting with his ring finger. And then number one is Die Hard. Not this version, the previous version.
That is fair. All right, thank you for that list. So, Richard, do you want to tell people where they can find you? Where can they find Richard Kirkham?
I'm available to people who are interested in listening to what I have to say on the Lambcast, which is the official podcast of the Large Association of Movie Blogs. You can find us at largeaskmovieblogs.com, or you could search Lambcast on Facebook and find links to our shows every week. And then my own site, my personal site, is Kirkham A Movie A Day. And I post on there regularly, two or three times a week, movies that if I see it in a theater, I'm going to do a post on it. And I also have special programming that I do, that I write about on there. This year I'm doing a Throwback Thursday. So Thursday, I'm doing a movie from 1975.
All right. Very cool. Actually, now that you're living in Texas as opposed to in California, is it harder to find theaters that are showing older movies like you like to try and find?
I tell you what, the program, it's a little bit more convenient to find the programming because we have Alamo Draft Houses here. They're very good in their programming. I'm not thrilled with the environment because having people serving food and distributing bills during the movie is a little irritating to me, but they are very good about finding programming and putting it together. I do miss sometimes, when you're in Hollywood, you get guests showing up at the screenings, and I have only been to, I think, one or two here in Texas where we had a special guest talk about what was going on. I saw Bruce Campbell and Quentin Tarantino at presentations at the Paramount Theater. So it's. I'm actually going to see Return of the Jedi today.
Ooh, all right. Maybe George Lucas will show up. That's what you're saying?
That's not going to happen.
For the 40th anniversary, right?
Yes.
All right. Very cool. All right, I'm jealous. I would love to be able to go see Return of the Jedi again in the theater, if only they were showing it here. Oh well.
Well, it's so interesting because it is a 40th anniversary release. It was a wide release for this week or last weekend, this week, and it showed up top 10 in the box office and was beating some of the current films on a re-release 40 years after it came out.
Well, come on. Behind the curtain, it is the end of April, beginning of May. So it's not as if, we're not at the, we only have Guardians coming out next week. So
that's it.
I don't think Return of the Jedi will beat Guardians next week, but
that's not going to happen.
It would be nice to see, but I don't think that's going to happen. Right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. Or you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So until tomorrow, I'll have what she's having. Oh, sorry. I keep doing that. I keep forgetting that I'm not doing Harry Mattelli anymore.
I'll have what she's having too, but yippee-ki-yay, yeah. She's having something really fun.
So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay, everybody.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here,